friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. African football fans are looking forward to a big weekend of qualifying matches for next year's Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon. In one of the fixtures Saturday, the Cranes of Uganda will host the Blue Sharks of Cape Verde. Magumi Davis Rakawinge has this preview for us from Kampala.
Mathias Lule, the Uganda Cranes assistant coach, and his senior, Sebastian Desabri, take the Uganda Cranes through physical fitness at Nelson Mandela National Stadium, Nambole. They are in the final preparations ahead of what they have termed as make-or-break game tomorrow. Lule says the players need to be fit for their game against the Islanders, Cape Verde.
All players are motivated. They know what they want. They know the task ahead of them. 100%, they are set.
Team captain Dennis Onyango, who plays for the South African Giants, Mamelodi Sundowns, says they are well aware of the challenge ahead of them.
Of course, we know the kind of game we're going to face. Very difficult game. But it's never been easy. There are no easy games in football recently. So we need to give our best and take the team back to AFCON, because it's our task to go back. And we're playing a team that is very much motivated. For them, it's a win or bust. So we've got no choice as well than to win the game on Saturday, which is tomorrow.
The Uganda Cranes beat Cape Verde 1-0 when the two teams met in the first leg in Praia last year. The Cranes are unbeaten and yet concede a goal in the qualifiers and have 10 points in 4 games. The other members of Group L are Tanzania with 5 points, Cape Verde with 4 points, and bottom-placed Lesotho on 3 points. Either team in this group has a chance of qualifying if they win all their remaining games. Ahmed Hussein is the spokesperson for the Federation for Uganda Football Association, or FUFA, which runs football in Uganda.
We need 1 point from the game on Saturday, but the message the coach and the players are delivering to the fans, they want to make them happy. This is the final game at home for a national senior team, the Uganda Cranes, and we know what that means for any team playing the Uganda Cranes at Nambole Stadium.
The Uganda Cranes have not lost a competitive match at Nambole since 2015, when they lost against the star-studded Togolese team, captained by former Arsenal player Emmanuel Adebayo. At Nambole, the Cranes have beaten or managed a draw against soccer powerhouse teams like Nigeria, Ghana, Egypt and Senegal. Should the Uganda Cranes qualify, it would be the second time the Ugandans managed to get back-to-back qualification, having reached the finals in 1974, 1976 and 1978. The Cape Verde team arrived in Kampala this Thursday and have said they will look for a win to remain in contention for qualifying. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Magume Davis Rwakalinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Magume. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In another Nations Cup qualifier Saturday, South Africa will face visiting Nigeria in Johannesburg. Joining us now with more details is reporter Samson Omale. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. South Africa need a win and Nigeria a draw from their Group E clash on Saturday at the FNB Stadium in Johannesburg to be certain of qualification after both teams missed the 2017 tournament. Bafana coach is Stuart Baxter.
I just want us to have this, the same advantage that Nigeria had when we went to Ujo. You know, that was an intimidating atmosphere. I would love the South African public to come and help us get past this one.
Captain of the Nigerian Super Eagles, Ahmed Musa, and striker Kelechi Iheanacho both expect victory over South Africa.
Yeah, we are going out there. We are not going to disrespect South Africa because they talk a lot. So we are going there with full respect. As you can see, everybody is just ready. And the outcome of the game is determined after 90 minutes. So we're going out there to win, not to lose.
For me especially, I'm ready, but I think the team as well, we are ready. And we are working really hard to make sure that we
we get our revenge against South Africa.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson, and I hope you have a sporty weekend. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to Monrovia, where the Lone Stars of Liberia are at home against the Warriors of Zimbabwe Sunday in a Group G Nations Cup qualifier. Zimbabwe leads this group with 8 points, followed by the Democratic Republic of Congo with 5 points, and Congo-Brazzaville and Liberia, which each have 4 points. The Warriors of Zimbabwe will book their ticket to Cameroon next year with a draw in Monrovia. Liberia's head coach, Thomas Kodjo, has given a first call-up to Newcastle United's under-23 midfielder, Mohamed Sangare. Moses Garziou reports from Monrovia.
When Coach Kodjo took charge of the team in July, Sangare became one of his prime targets to strengthen his squad for the remaining matches in the 2019 AFCON qualifiers. The 20-year-old Newcastle under-23 midfielder could not make it for the last three fixtures due to work permit issues.
Missing the call-up was obviously a little bit of, you know what it was, like a lot of misunderstanding, but I was frustrated, most of it. I was frustrated, but now, so I will do what I can to help the team and hopefully we can get the win.
With Sangare in the squad, the Lone Star coach told me it was an important addition to his squad.
His foundation coming through a program like the Newcastle Under-23, and I think he's going to fit in our system.
Moses Gazio, VOA Sports, Monrovia.
Thanks, Moses. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Angola's amputee football team, which lifted the trophy at the recent Amputee Football World Cup in Mexico. Stefan Lovgren reports from San Juan de los Lagos, Mexico.
For the first time ever, an African team has won football's biggest prize, the World Cup. The Amputee Football World Cup, that is. The recently concluded tournament, which was held in the Mexican town of San Juan de los Lagos, saw Angola beating Turkey in a dramatic final that had to be settled by penalty shootout. It was sweet revenge for the Angolans, who surprisingly reached the final of the last World Cup in 2014, only to then lose to Russia. Striker João Jiquete said the victory did not belong to just him or his team.
I'm not here just for me. I'm here for Angola. I'm here for Africa.
Amputee football, which is a seven-a-side game, has grown in popularity in recent years, with dozens of new countries around the world taking up the sport. Yet in most of Africa, amputee football has struggled to gain official support. Ghana and Liberia, two of the five African countries scheduled to take part in this year's World Cup, were forced to pull out because of financial difficulties. The Kenyan team, meanwhile, had to abandon plans for a pre-tournament training camp when government funding failed to materialize.
In the end, they said, we will only provide you with air tickets. We didn't have any kits. The jersey I'm wearing right now is not a national team jersey. This is a Nairobi club, football club jersey. You know, it's not the national colors.
It was a similar story for the Nigerian team, which made its World Cup debut after missing out on three previous tournaments for financial reasons. With private funding arriving late, the Nigerian delegation had to be substantially trimmed, and most of the players only arrived on the day of their opening match after a grueling 55-hour journey to Mexico. Not surprisingly, the game against Brazil ended in a crushing defeat for the Nigerians. Still, the Nigerian team rebounded and made history by recording its first ever World Cup win against El Salvador, a previous tournament winner. Defender Sarafadin Olelekan Oyeleke says the future of amputee football in Nigeria is strong if the sport receives more support.
We have a lot of amputees in Nigeria. Let's see how we can engage them. Let's see how we can have leagues also in Nigeria. The government needs to come in, private organization. We need everybody around this.
The Kenyan captain, Dalmas Otieno, says more exposure for the sport will lead to changing attitudes about people with disabilities in Africa, who are often stigmatized at home.
We should try and expose this game in the grassroots. Let's take it into the villages. Let people get to know about this sport. I think we can create awareness, and people will have a positive look or perspective with amputee people.
The next Amputee Football World Cup will be held in Costa Rica in 2022. By then, organizers also hope to hold the first Amputee Football World Cup for women. This is Stefan Lofgren for VOA in San Juan de los Lagos, Mexico.
Thanks, Stefan. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Just ahead, my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson will have a package of golf and soccer news for us. But first, this programming note from another VOA colleague, Carol Castiel.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm your host, Sonny Young. VOA's Jim Stevenson joins us now with some golf and soccer news. And Jim tees off with this English golfer.
You know, it's nice to just prove it to yourself every now and again.
45-year-old Lee Westwood did prove he could win. The English golfer snapped a four-year title drought by topping the leaderboard at the Nedbank Golf Challenge at the Gary Player Golf Club in Sun City, South Africa.
Pretty emotional, a little bit relieved. Still got it, I guess. And just nice to do it again under pressure and win against a couple of quality players at the end there, you know, Sergio and Louis were my two nearest challengers.
Westwood's 15 under par was three shots better than Spaniard Sergio Garcia and four over local favorite Luis Oosthuizen. Ross Fisher of England placed fourth on one of the most challenging courses players faced all year.
It's definitely up there, you know, with the heat and the altitude, the grass that you have to play off, and then to factor in the way the wind is around here, yeah, it's definitely up there. I mean, you don't necessarily get punished for missing fairways, but if you miss the rough, then you're in thick bushes.
Li Haotong tied for fifth in another impressive performance by the up-and-coming Chinese golfer.
It's one of the great rounds of the year, actually, especially compared last week. It is really good bounce back. So I think I'm in a good shape, looking forward to the Dubai.
For Lee Westwood, a split with his caddy brought his girlfriend, Helen, back to the bag and perhaps has given him a new winning edge.
You know, she's caddied twice for me this year, and we lost in a playoff in Denmark and we've won here, so I have to have a bit of a rethink. Not least about who caddies for me, but, you know, percentages.
The European golf season is ending in Dubai at the DP World Tour Championship.
The best thing about it is that you've got to the final event of the year and you've got a chance of winning the race to Dubai, so it doesn't matter how slim it is, you've had a great year and you're still filled with excitement coming into this event.
Tommy Fleetwood of England was crowned the top European player for 2017 after last year's event. He's in the running again, behind Italian Francesco Molinari.
The race to Dubai, it's the biggest thing I've ever done, but having achieved something so great in your career, it's important to kick on and not just sit back and enjoy that. So I think the fast start and what we've done this year has been great, and I'm proud of that.
Rory McIlroy of Northern Ireland has won the event twice and claimed the year-end top ranking three times.
Yeah, it's always good to be back in Dubai. It's a place that I'm very comfortable at. You know, I've been coming here I played my first Desert Classic in 2006, and then obviously played a lot of these DP Worlds here at Jumeirah Golf Estates. So I'm, you know, I've won a couple of times here, a couple of times. You know, it's I love the golf course here. I think it sets up well for me.
McIlroy is looking to a new driver in his bag to help him out.
Just had a driver that wasn't spinning enough, and any time it got offline, it really got offline. And that's part of my game that's always been very strong that I've really struggled with this year. I feel like if I had driven the ball better this year, I would have won a few more times.
Lee Westwood is coming off of his win in South Africa and last one in Dubai 9 years ago.
You know, you have to have had a good year to play in this tournament, and, you know, it's kind of a celebration of the European Tour of the whole year, and it's a good finale to the year, I think. It's a well-established tournament on the schedule now.
This week presents a different challenge.
Well, it's a completely different golf course to last week at Nedbank. There's a lot more room. The greens are a little different. They're more grainy than I've seen in the past. I think it's a bit more of a birdie fest here. You know, you've got to try and shoot low. Depending on the weather, obviously, if it gets a bit windy, you know, it can get tricky.
Coming off a successful showing at the Asian Games in Indonesia, China has its sights set on the 2020 Summer Olympics in Tokyo with the signing of veteran 71-year-old Dutchman Gus Hiddink by the Chinese Football Association to coach its under-21 team for a reported $4.7 million. Cameron Wilson is a Shanghai-based Scot who operates a website that monitors Chinese football activity called Wild East Football.
He's very highly rated and well-respected, but he really had his work cut out because, as I think most of the international world knows now, China has put a big emphasis on its football. Very much wants to improve its team, which has underachieved for a long time. And they have all kinds of investment and new rules designed to boost the development in the game. But he's under a lot of pressure because, as it stands, the under-23 team, which is the team he has been put in charge of, is still... The achievement is still not very good.
Hiddink joins 70-year-old Italian coach Marcello Lippi, who has been with the team since 2016 and is rumored to be the highest-paid international coach in the world.
Well, Lippi's another world-famous coach. He's one of the most successful coaches in world soccer history. I think he is definitely someone who, if he can't get the Chinese team to play well, then I think they'll be struggling to find anyone else better. Lippi is in charge of the full men's national team, whereas Hiddink's in charge of the under-23 team. So I think part of the problem in the Chinese football setup in the past is that the different parts of it have not always worked in harmony. I think there's one hand, the left hand hasn't always known what the right hand's been doing. So I think both the guys need to coordinate their actions to make sure that all the investment and the emphasis put into the game doesn't go to waste.
China's leadership released a reform plan back in 2015 with the goal of providing football training in 50,000 schools by the year 2025 and two major training facilities to ensure China becomes an international contender. China has only reached the World Cup finals once in 2002 and will have to work hard to reach the Tokyo Olympics.
China hasn't qualified since 2008 for Olympic football, and that, of course, was when China hosted the Olympics. The way the Chinese football system works, the way the government works, they have such emphasis and they put such importance on Olympics as a whole concept. So the expectation and the pressure is really high, and I think Hiddink is going to have his work cut out trying to make the team qualify for this tournament. The national team, they have underachieved for such a long time. They have a well-established league in China since 2004. Actually, around the same time the Major League Soccer in the States started up, the Chinese Professional League began as well. The last World Cup in Russia, the States had qualified for every single World Cup since they established Professional Soccer League. Whereas in China, they've not qualified once in 2002 when the World Cup was in Japan and Korea. And ever since then, they've not been at a World Cup at all. So this is why we've seen the big push by the government to use football and to thrust the Chinese football into the world limelight and improve the businesses. But they're still struggling quite badly, to be quite frank.
Cameron Wilson said despite China's vast resources, it still lacks a sports culture necessary to foster competitive teams. He said the emphasis remains that the young continue to spend their spare time studying, not playing sports, in order to achieve a good education so they can earn a well-paying job to care for their aging parents.
Thanks, Jim. That's my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Turning to tennis, Swiss star Roger Federer defeated South Africa's Kevin Anderson in straight sets 6-4 and 6-3 in the round-robin competition of the ATP Finals in London, but both players are through to the semifinals. Craig Gabriel reports from the British capital.
By winning the first set against Kevin Anderson, Roger Federer assured himself of a place in the semis for the 15th time from 16 appearances at the ATP Finals.
Yeah, I'm feeling great. I'm very happy that I still have energy left in the tank and that mentally I feel fresh, to be honest.
Had Federer lost, it would have been only the second time and the first time since 2008 that he had lost two round-robin matches at the season-ending championship. Going into this match, Kevin Anderson already knew that he had qualified for the semis, becoming the first South African to do so in the event's history.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great. As I said, the week before was really enjoyable. Had, you know, was in the city, went to the theatre and had some, you know, really cool like media and press to do, and everybody was so excited about the event. As I said, going into it, obviously the main focus is on the tennis, and a few days later I've, you know, qualified through to the semis. It's, you know, it's nice, the day on, day off. We've also done some, you know, some nice things. Tomorrow we're going to Abbey Road Studios in the morning, so it's really exciting. Can't wait to do that and come back and practice in the afternoon and then get ready for obviously a really big weekend. I've, you know, qualified for the semis, so don't know who I'm playing yet, but whoever it is, I'm going to be excited and, you know, ready to go and hopefully fighting for a spot in the finals.
He knew he was through because of the earlier match when Dominic Thiem beat Kei Nishikori. Federer defeated Anderson 6-4, 6-3, and that end result determined the group standings. The win put Federer at number one and Anderson at number two, while Thiem and Nishikori can start their off-season. In the other group, Novak Djokovic is already into the semis, but he will play Marin Cilic, and Alexander Zverev takes on John Isner. The semis matchup will be Federer playing the number two player of the other group and Anderson playing the number one player of that group. Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports, London.
Thanks, Craig. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America. In National Basketball Association action Thursday night, the Houston Rockets powered past the defending champion Golden State Warriors by 21 points. The AP's Adam Spillane reports from Houston, Texas.
With the help of a 21-2 fourth quarter run, the Houston Rockets beat the Golden State Warriors 107-86. The long burst started the fourth quarter with the Rockets already up by 13. Rockets guard James Harden said defense was the key for his team.
We were just active, like we've been doing, and I've been saying the last few games. And nothing changes when you got great defense. And you play extremely hard, good things happen for your offense. I mean, I think that's what, you know, what's happening right now.
Harden led all scorers with 27 points as the Rockets improved to 7-7 on the season. Kevin Durant's 20 points led Golden State, but Kevon Looney was the Warriors' next highest scorer with 12 as they fall to 12-4. Adam Spillane, Houston.
Thanks, Adam. The Golden State Warriors played without their two-time league most valuable player, Stephen Curry, who was sidelined for a fourth consecutive game. Now, Curry has already been ruled out of Golden State's next two games because of a groin injury. Meanwhile, the Rockets announced before that win against the Warriors that they are parting ways with 10-time NBA All-Star Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo signed a one-year, $2.4 million contract with the Rockets in the offseason, but Melo has struggled to fit in with the club. My educated basketball guess is that another NBA club will take a chance on Carmelo Anthony and maybe pick him up after he has parted ways with the Houston Rockets. In two more NBA results Thursday night, the Denver Nuggets routed the visiting Atlanta Hawks 138-93, and the host Los Angeles Clippers beat the San Antonio Spurs 116-111. I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And that wraps up the November 16th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Zubair Tyan. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Press Conference USA. On this edition of the program, a conversation with Woody Carter, author of a fascinating new novel, Narada's Children, a visionary tale of two cities. The novel is a spiritual tale that brings together mystical elements from different religious traditions to connect communities with a common African heritage. That's Press Conference USA, Saturday and Sunday, on The Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
The U.S. Geological Survey says 71% of the Earth's surface is covered with water. A couple of recent studies have also suggested that there are oceans of water deep inside our planet's mantle. Scientists suggest after its formation about 4.53 billion years ago, Earth was a dry, hot, and molten planet. A heavy bombardment of water and ice-bearing asteroids and comets several million to a billion years later provided the supply of H2O we rely on today. Now, research by a team of geoscientists from Arizona State University proposes another source of Earth's water they say has been overlooked. The sun and planets were formed from a large cloud of gas and dust containing an abundant supply of hydrogen. The study suggests a combination of all that hydrogen, along with Earth's rocky materials, could be the origin of most of our planet's water. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Is there a leadership deficit in Africa? Does the continent lack leaders who are compassionate about their citizens and believe in strong institutions? Host Shaka Sali returns to lead a discussion on the importance of strong leaders and strong institutions on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Half of Yemen's 28 million people are on the brink of starvation due to a deadly three-year conflict. It is the world's worst humanitarian crisis. What are prospects for upcoming UN-sponsored peace negotiations? Next on Encounter, we discuss the precarious state of Yemen and the way forward. That's Encounter, Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA News.
VOA. When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.